Welcome to Lessons from a PhD, where every single episode teaches you different lessons to make your PhD and career journey easier.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sierra Foshi. I'm on the executive board for Project Short, and I'm the director of resource development on the pre-grad side. And I'm also a neuroscience PhD student at the University of Pennsylvania.
And hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Anna Ampaw, and I am the host of Lessons from a PhD. I'm also currently working in the pharmaceutical industry, but in terms of my educational background, I have a PhD in chemistry and also a master's in chemistry as well.
Okay, great. Yeah, so this is kind of like a crossover episode to mark the beginning of the collaboration between our two organizations. And so since we both have podcasts, I thought, you know, it'd be great to kind of go over how we both got involved in this kind of nonprofit work and then talk about our individual organizations and the kind of services that we provide. So I guess we could start just by talking about how we each became involved or became passionate about this type of thing.
For sure. Yeah. So I don't mind starting. I guess I forgot to include in my intro that I also have an organization.
I forgot to mention that I also have a podcast.
So. I know. Okay. Which is why we're here, right? So a little bit about, well, first, my organization is called Empowering Female Minds in STEM, and I'm an executive director of it. So I can talk about how that came to fruition. So as I said, I have a PhD in chemistry. And as I was doing my PhD, if you listen to my previous podcast, I talked about just kind of my journey getting into graduate school. And it wasn't a straight journey. I didn't plan to go to graduate school at all. It just kind of came on my lap. So I felt like I was very rushed in going to grad school. And in terms of my family, I was the first generation to actually go and pursue a PhD. So I didn't know much about what a PhD entailed. I didn't know much about just kind of what to expect and what is expected of me. And I felt that on top of the stress of the work of a PhD, there was also that added stress of trying to figure out, okay, what am I doing? What's expected of me and what am I going to do after? So I had to kind of go out and look for resources in terms of mentors that would kind of help pave the way for me and also network as well with other PhD students, just so I can get an idea of, okay, you know, this is exactly what you're supposed to do as a PhD student and what's expected of you. And even network with people that have had PhDs in the past, our PhDs in chemistry in the past and have graduated and moved on to industry or other job careers. So because I was very dedicated in kind of figuring out for myself, I realized that I'm probably not the only one going through this. And so my background is I was born and raised in Canada, but in terms of my background, I'm Ghanaian. So my parents are from Ghana. They immigrated before they gave birth to my sister and I. But I still really have very strong roots to Ghana. And I was just imagining how, you know, there's a lot of women in STEM there. And I've also communicated with women in STEM that are also there that want to pursue graduate school, but don't really know what it entails and don't really know, they don't really know where to start. And over here on the Western side, I would say in Canada, you know, US, we have a gender and a racial disparity when it comes to STEM, where you don't see a lot of, you know, Black women that pursue STEM careers and STEM higher education. And that's kind of what I saw when I was going into my PhD, that I was the only one. When I was doing my master's, I was the only one in my department that was Black and a woman. And when I was doing my PhD, I was the only one for, I think, the first 3 years that was Black and a woman. So you can imagine how isolating that can feel. And so in Ghana, I realized that there is a huge gender disparity where a lot of women are discouraged, rather. And that's just because of societal norms. You know, women are meant for the home and to bear children and to do, like, to teach and to do home economics. But when it comes to those hardcore STEM fields, women are discouraged because they think it's going to take away from their role as a mother or as a wife and such. And so just from hearing that and from my peers in Ghana, I decided to start. I didn't intend for it to be a nonprofit organization, to be honest. I thought it was just going to be like a cute little boot camp where I can invite women just to come together and network in the STEM field, and we can talk about our experiences, but then also add value by bringing in professional development experts to kind of prepare them for the workforce. But then I got a lot of interest, and I realized that there's just so much work to be done there. And so I decided to kind of full swing start a nonprofit organization where we offer so many different things to African women in STEM. So, like I said, we do offer boot camps, professional development boot camps, where we invite professionals to come and speak just about different topics that can help prepare, women in STEM for the workforce. So topics such as, managing your finances or career planning, and other topics such like that. And then we also have mentorship programs as well, where we pair women in STEM that are either, in their undergraduate or graduate with other women in STEM that are also pursuing, STEM careers. We have master classes where, again, we bring professionals to speak on STEM-based topics to kind of empower and help our women progress through their studies. And we also have scholarships as well. So this I started when I was doing my PhD in 2020, and I'm happy to say that, about 2 to 3 years later, it's still going strong, and we've fortunately impacted a lot of African women in STEM just to continue on their trajectory and to know that they can do both, that they can also pursue higher education and also have a family if that's what they want as well. And there's no limitations just because they're a woman.
Yeah, I think that's all fantastic. So do you, I know you mentioned like classes and mentorship and stuff. Is this mostly virtual programming or do you have any in-person stuff as well?
Yeah, so because my team and myself, most of us are abroad. We have some that are based in Ghana, and just because we want to reach a wider audience, yes, we start or we're based in Ghana, we operate in Ghana, but we also don't want to discriminate amongst other sub-Saharan African countries just because they all experience the same issue, right? So a lot of our programs are virtual, but once a year we do do the in-person boot camp, which is in Ghana. So this year we're going to be going in September. And it's a 3-day boot camp. And so we host that in the capital region of Ghana.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think similarly, Project Short is kind of a national and international group, so it's very easy to stay connected when you have things like Zoom and podcasts and things like that. And then it was kind of convenient for me joining it because I started grad school in 2020, which was, the midst of the pandemic. So it was kind of a very convenient way to say, hey, you can join this great volunteer organization, but it's all virtual anyway. So there wasn't any like changes that had to be made.
Yeah.
And then I think I related a lot to some of the things you were saying in terms of your trajectory. Like for me personally, I knew pretty early on that I wanted to go to grad school. So I kind of was preparing things early. Like I had joined a lab as an undergraduate and I thought I had my letters of rec and all that stuff. But then when I applied my senior year, I applied to like a dozen different schools and I didn't get accepted anywhere. And so that first round of just rejections really kind of shocked me and made me evaluate my approach and like, oh, I guess I there's like a mismatch between my expectations and what they were expecting from me. And so I think that made me kind of really reevaluate the whole admissions process and think, well, I thought that I was so well prepared and I thought I had all of these advantages. And yet, if I, if I can't figure out what they want, then it must be very difficult for kind of the wider population to figure it out as well. And so I think that was part of what led me to really be invested in this concept of trying to highlight or make more transparent the whole admissions process and what we call like the hidden curriculum. And so the second time I applied, I had learned a lot from just my previous failed attempt. And I thought, all this knowledge that I have going into it the second time around, if I just shared it with other people, then they could avoid the mistakes that I had made. And so when I joined grad school, like I said, it was the midst of the pandemic. I was looking for volunteer opportunities. And kind of just by coincidence, Project Short was founded by Hannah Liu, who is a grad student in my same program, the neuroscience program at Penn. And so that was where I first heard of it. And I was just like, oh, perfect. This is a virtual opportunity. It's an opportunity for me to pass on all of the things that I learned about admissions. And I began just as a mentor. So Project Short, let me get this right about the acronym because it's a bit long, but Project Short stands for Students for Higher Education Opportunities and Representation and Training. And so we offer mentorship and resources for graduate and medical school applicants with similar goals of promoting diversity in academia and medical fields and trying to promote kind of transparency in the whole admissions process. And so I think one of the most valuable and core things we offer is one-on-one mentorship. So mentees will get matched to a current mentor who's either a current graduate student or a postdoc to give feedback about pretty much general advice, but also specifically editing personal statements and CVs and stuff like that, which can be very helpful. We also offer mock interviews, so you can get a separate mentor and practice your interviewing. And then there's also all kinds of stuff we do throughout the year, like programming events. So these are live panel discussions where you can come and ask questions. And then, of course, as the director of resources, I also develop things like the podcast or written resources that we keep online about kind of all steps of the application process. And I think one of the big goals for me currently and into the future is trying to reach back earlier and earlier into the process. So a lot of our mentees come to us when they're like right about to start their applications. And of course, we have a lot to offer them in terms of advice, but a lot of the most important parts of their application have kind of been determined at that point. Like they have the research experience that they've done, they have good letters if they have them, you know, these types of things. And so trying to develop resources to go back even to like early undergrads to be like, hey, if you think this is where you want to go, you might want to start looking into these types of things early on to set yourself up to be successful. And I think that's particularly important for underrepresented groups, since, like you mentioned, there's just kind of this lack of awareness of both how competitive the process is and then also what people are kind of expecting from you now that you basically have to have this huge body of work already. If you have, you know, you're competing against people who have publications and years of full-time research and all these things. And so, you know, just kind of raising awareness of that issue is also a huge goal for mine moving into the future.
Yeah, no, I think that's amazing. And I remember when I first heard of Project Short, I loved what you guys are currently doing. Just because it's something that I wish that I knew of before I started my journey. You know, because like you said, with underrepresented groups, going into grad school for a core science isn't really something that is spoken about. And I've spoken about this before in my podcast, where a lot of immigrant parents, they think that if you're interested in science, it's usually you go into those professions like med school and dental school. So everyone knows that in order to get into med school, you need to do the MCAT, right? And so you kind of prepare yourself during undergrad. But I find that when I was an undergrad, no one really talked about going into grad school for a science like chemistry or biology and what it actually entails to prepare yourself for that, you know. So that's really good that Project Short kind of, you know, provides that resource and helps student prepare ahead of time so that when the time comes to apply, like you're ready and you know
Yeah.
exactly what you can bring to the table.
And I think an additional layer of that is also like domestic versus international applicants. And I think this is also a huge area where I'd like to see us grow, which is that, you know, for as difficult as we say it is for US applicants to apply to US schools, it's like orders of magnitude more difficult if you're applying outside of the country. And I think that's not really discussed or open, you know, a lot of programs aren't very open about this, but that they have sometimes a set number of spots for international applicants. I think, It could be like one or two, and that's, in the US you can get eight, 10, and then entire rest of the world is competing for one single spot, and it's just incredibly difficult. And then there's also those layers of, moving to a new place, and the cultural and even language barriers and things like that, and also even just funding considerations. I know a lot of government or other types of grants can exclude international students, and so those are all like specific things that you need to be mindful of, or that we would like to, make students aware of ahead of time when they're considering these types of things.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. So how do you, I guess, cater to the international students? Because I know your base Project Short is based in the US.
Yeah, so I think one thing with mentors is that what we're trying to do is the advice we give is kind of generally applicable to all applicants. So when you're reviewing a personal statement or whatever it may be, individual mentors, especially ones who have just always been in the US, might not know a lot of these things, a lot of these nuances of international applications. So I think it's important to not make them feel, intimidated. I've spoken to mentors who are a little reluctant to take on international mentees for this reason, because they are worried about saying the wrong thing or about, not really having any advice to give them. And I think so for individual mentors, it's kind of just like treat everyone the same. That type of thing. But I think we do have some re resources specific to international students that we have and are developing. So like for this podcast, we have some episodes specific to international students to give advice more generally. And then there's also on our website some more specific application advice, which will go into the nitty-gritty of like visas and English proficiency tests and that sort of thing. But even then, I think we can expand this a bit more to kind of understand the international student need better and think about how to expand our resources. So that's one of the things I'd like to do as the director is identify the gaps and the needs, and then try to fill them.
That's awesome.
And I think that would be maybe something that, we could discuss since you kind of have that international perspective.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I know that a lot of women in our organization, that's also something that they're interested in is studying abroad, right? But then again, like, where do you even start? What, even when it comes to like immigration policies and stuff and looking for a grad school mentor and stuff. So I think that, yeah, Project Short would really assist with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I get demographics information from this podcast, so I do know that there are listeners across Africa. So definitely a great resource just for general application feedback. And we do also have, the majority of our mentors, I think, are domestic, but we do also have international mentors. So I know that a lot of work goes into matching, pairing mentors and mentees. So if a mentor with international kind of perspective or experience is something that would be valuable, I think we could, find people to help out too.
Yeah, no, that's great. Awesome. See, collaboration's already being made.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I actually, so this is somewhat related, but another thing you can do if you're looking for resources is look into the specific programs that you're interested in. So I'm, like I mentioned, in the neuroscience department at Penn, and we have a specific, like a graduate group specific application support program for underrepresented applicants, where you will, similar to Project Short, where you'll be paired with a current student, but within our specific department, and we can tell you about the department and our specific expectations and give you feedback on different components of your application. And I think it's a relatively new thing, but there are other programs like that who offer these types of support. So looking into that can also be valuable. And in fact, a couple of years ago through that program, I met a student from Ghana who I told about Project Short, and he wasn't aware of it. So then he got that kind of multiple avenues of feedback and mentorship. So yeah, it can be valuable.
That's great. That's really great to hear.
Yeah, and then I guess Looking into the future, do you have like a vision for kind of next steps or expanding or, anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, we're only about 3 years into the organization, and if you have a nonprofit organization, you know it requires a lot of work, right? And just a lot of work in terms of gathering funding and setting up programs and regulations and everything. So we're still going through the hoops of really trying to solidify our programs and our funding sources. But in terms of next steps, I would say to really secure or really just to put a firm foundation on our programs. So our boot camp, I would say, is the core program of the organization. And so that one, like I said, it's in person, but we do want to expand it beyond Ghana. So we do want to really build our base in Ghana and then eventually do pop-up boot camps in other parts of sub-Saharan Africa. So maybe next go to Nigeria or even Togo, Malawi, other areas in Africa, and just to really just build a movement of females that are in STEM, and just to really kind of push them towards higher education and leaders. So that's our main goal, is to create leaders in STEM, because when people always ask, how do you fight the gender disparity? Yes, you can get girls and young women interested in STEM, but if you're in a STEM company, you don't really have a lot of power unless you're in a senior position, right? So we really want to try to push the women that are in our program to seek out senior positions, even to be entrepreneurs, to have that kind of power where they can also encourage other African women to go into STEM, or they can hire other African women, in their companies as well, just so that they can help fight that gender disparity. So like I always say, it doesn't end with just empowering female minds in STEM, but we also want to pass the torch to the women that we are mentoring that we have in our organization, just to continue the movement, so that it is something that can, eventually help the gender disparity. And we can kind of see those numbers of, the fact that there's only about 30% of women that are in the STEM field to rise to maybe even 50% or 60%, over the next maybe 10, 20, I don't know how long it's going to take. Several years. So
Yeah,
that's
I
kind
think
of like
that's
our long-term
fantastic.
vision. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it kind of speaks to this big issue. I think it's referred to as like the leaky pipeline, which is,
Yeah.
if you talk to very young kids, boys and girls are interested in things like becoming a doctor or science or things like that. But then as you get older, it's like fewer and fewer people of color or fewer and fewer women are in, like you said, higher and higher positions. And so, yeah, sort of being able to provide continual mentorship for critical points of the process can really help to reverse a lot of these disparities.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing I find too is that it's not that women aren't interested in STEM. There's a lot of interest, right? And I realize there's a lot of organizations that cater towards girls to get them interested in STEM. And I think that's amazing. But there's one thing about being interested in STEM and then actually going for it, because like you said, as you kind of go higher and higher and higher in education, you'll see the leaky pipeline, that there's less and less underrepresented, women or people in general that pursue STEM. So that's kind of where EFEMS fits. It's like, okay, what is there to kind of help prevent that leaky pipeline? Yes, you have the interest, but what is there to actually help push you forward to pursue a higher education, to pursue a career in STEM, and to pursue a leadership position in STEM? So that's kind of where EFEMS fits in.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing I like seeing about Project Short is when past mentees become mentors. And I think I would really like to see us actively promoting that type of kind of circular or, type of thing, just because I think becoming a mentor both helps the person that you're mentoring, but then it also helps you in terms of kind of helping you to reflect on your own position and providing a networking opportunities and things like that as well.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think giving back is key too, because with all the knowledge that, we've learned along our journey, it's something that we can pass on to the younger generation so they don't have to struggle like we struggled.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe I'll give a final plug for Project Short, which is you can find us on all of our social medias. We're on Twitter, I guess now X, Facebook, Instagram, all those things. And if you check out our website, there's a link year round, which you can apply to be either a mentor or a mentee for MD, PhD, and I think even master's and some other types of programs. And so, yeah, we would really like to help as many people as we can.
And with Empowering Femmes, you can find us on all social media platforms. It's at Empowering Femmes, so FEMS. We're also on Twitter. We are on LinkedIn. We are on Facebook and Instagram. And you can also visit our website too, which has a lot of information about what we do and the programs that we offer. It's www.empoweringfems.com. And like I mentioned before, we are having a boot camp in Accra, Ghana. So if there are any listeners that are based in Ghana, we are having a boot camp that is for African women in STEM, and it's going to entail a lot of different things. We're doing it bigger and better this year. So we'll have a research symposium, as well as a lot of really great speakers to come. So if that's something that you're interested in attending, you can visit our website to find out more information or go on our social media pages as well.
All right, fantastic. Well, yeah, it was great talking to you.
You as well, and wishing you all the best with Project Short.